Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. I think this one is going to be particularly fun as I get the chance to discuss something that not every guest is so into, and that's geocoding, which is what I work on, and as does my guest. So this is going to be a treat for the geocoding fans. Today I'm speaking with Jake Cracknell, who is co-founder and CTO of a new company called Doorways.ai, which is focused on geocoding and routing specifically to the doorway for the delivery use case, as I understand it. So, Jake, welcome to the GeoMob Podcast. Why don't you do a better job of explaining exactly what Doorways.ai is?
Yeah, hi, Ed. So thanks very much for the invitation for running this podcast. So, we're building a product to try and take the frustration out of navigating the last 100 meters, just trying to make couriers more efficient. So, as you say, we're precisely mapping where the front door is, but we're also trying to provide like the optimal point to park and to drive to, which is something that isn't exactly what most geocoders do.
And so, what led you to get into this business? Were you working in the delivery industry in some way, shape, or form? How did you see the problem?
So yeah, my co-founder and I, we've spent all of our working lives in this domain. Myself working at Ocado, which is an online supermarket in the UK. So I was a software engineer / data scientist in the routing and geo area. But our main focus was route optimization. And this is like the software that shuffles the orders around to create the most efficient routes, on time, minimizing amount of labor, amount of fuel we use. My co-founder Michael Schindler, he's the Doorway CEO. He's worked at Amazon, other delivery startups in process engineering. So our observation and our sort of hypothesis is that the industry is hyper focused on minimizing the drive time between orders. So this is like the scheduling, the routing problem, mm-hmm. Which is really good. We've made leaps and bounds, but like drop density is increasing so fast that we're at the point that couriers are actually spending most of their time on foot. So not actually driving, but actually doing the delivering. So anything we can do to shorten the time and eliminate the little frustrations in the delivering process, that should be the primary focus today. That's like the lowest hanging fruit.
Okay, and so how does your software solve this, or how does your service address this?
I'd also just add as well the fact that given how dense these routes are, the amount of slack time that's built into these routes is increasingly small. So there's very little margin for error. So any sort of little delays, driver getting lost or confused for even just a minute, these really aggregate and snowball. If you're delivering food or anything with a time slot, this is just going to lead to late deliveries, cancel deliveries. If you're a player like Deliveroo or Uber Eats, sometimes you'll try and stack deliveries, one after the other on a single moped, and you have a deadline to meet, because at some point the food's going to get too cold and you're going to have to refund it, and it's just like wasted money. So while some companies will try and plan in slack time, say we think it will take 3 minutes to deliver to, travel to and from the van, well, let's make it 3.5 minutes just in case. First of all, that ruins your efficiency, but also it means that in the sort of takeaway domain, you often lose the ability to do the stacking. So your efficiency like literally halves in these cases.
I see. So this is the time from the time the driver kind of leaves the vehicle to actually handing the delivery off and getting back to the vehicle. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So what we call like the delivery time is, if you imagine, driver's going to get in the van, drive between addresses. If you imagine that, if you sort of start a stopwatch the moment the van stops. And, you know, this is going to include, you know, getting out of the van, getting your bearings, trying to find the house number, bringing the bags there, ringing the bell, getting back in the van. That's what we call the delivery time. And sometimes it's the sort of the customer to blame, you know, if someone takes a long time to get to the door, or, you know, if the building's really tall, you have to climb up lots of stairs. You can't really avoid that. But if it's literally a case of you follow the map and it takes you to the next road over, and I'll talk a lot about why that happens, you know, you get to the building, but it's not clear exactly how to enter it. Like the intercom system is a bit weird, I don't know, or it's difficult to find a parking space. That's the sort of, those are the sorts of frustrations that we're really trying to address.
Yeah, could easily see how that would add up over the course of a day.
Yeah. So, I'll try and sort of give an overview of like sort of our kind of proposition how to solve this problem and the issues we see. But I think just before I do, I think we need, as we're both sort of geocoding aficionados, we should probably agree on a few definitions. So I think like the process of taking like address text and turning that into a single pair of coordinates, we can both agree, we can both call that geocoding, right? That's correct. That is a geocode, yeah. And if I have two locations like A and B, and I want the, you know, optimal path between them, I'd call that routing. I think most people would call that routing.
As an American, I'd probably call it routing.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But fair enough. Yeah, yes, yeah. I agree.
I slightly prefer the term pathfinding, but that's just sort of, you know, jargon like from my previous job. Basically, so, you know, there are these two things. And in the OpenStreetMap context, you might use nominatim for your geocoder and Grasshopper for pathfinding. And actually, we're not trying to compete with either of these. We're sort of in this Venn diagram, we're sort of in the middle. So I'll try and describe what that is. So suppose you already have a geocode. It's like a perfect building centroid right in the middle of the rooftop. And by the way, in the UK, that's for a residential address, that's a tall order because the data isn't cheap. There's like licensing concerns. And the reason why a lot of these apps will, you know, you'd think they show address drop down. You think surely they know where they are, but they actually ask the customer to pin where they are on the map.
It's definitely not easy. There are so many edge cases, but okay, let's make the assumption we know where the coordinates are.
Yeah. So most of the time you have those coordinates, and I'd say like 90% of the time, if you just sort of plop those right into Google Maps or your favorite OpenStreetMap parter, there's no problem. There's not really any improvements that can be made. But that's 90% of the time, and we're sort of hyper focused on that 10%. And these are typically buildings where the closest navigable point on the road network is not the one you want. And the approach of asking your map for your routing engine, given this point, find me the closest road, the closest point on the road network, that question is fundamentally broken, but it's pretty much what they all do. And for good measure, they do this thing, they draw this sort of curvy dotted line from the road to the building as if to sort of say, good luck, bon voyage. We call that line the leap of faith, because it's just that's what it is. But anyway, just to clarify, it is true that it is a common improvement. For example, Grasshopper has this where it will try and bias that decision based on the road name, like similar road names, sometimes you different data sources are not going to precisely match, and we do that as well, but it doesn't always work, and often it's counterproductive. Often actually you had the right answer before and that leads you astray. So our kind of, we have, you know, our snapping function is hundreds of lines of code, and it involves like a lot of fine-tuned weights and looking at all sorts of different metadata to try and work this out. But really, I think the magic we add is trying to identify and avoid barriers, which is usually where the most of the mistakes, the blunders that happen in this sort of snapping function, can be blamed on this wall in the way, or a fence, or another building, or sometimes even like a river or canal. And this is really the problem that we're focused on, and I'm keen for a lot more eyes on that.
I see. So your algorithm attempts to tell the driver where you should actually park to actually be the fastest path to get into the building. Is that it?
Versus
the shortest straight line distance from a road to a building.
Yeah, definitely like a shorter straight line distance. That's the naive approach, and it works most of the time. But we're looking, you know, look at the map and say, there's going to be many times where you do that and it's like, that's clearly not right. That dotted line is going over a wall or a canal. It's just not going to work. So that's really what we're trying to do. And the other thing we try and provide is, in addition to like building centroid and the building outline, we make a good guess of inferring where the door is. So, you know, building with multiple sides, at minimum, there'll be four, I guess, perhaps three possible sides that building, that entrance could be.
One approach I have seen some people try to take is that they try to get, of course, the actual courier, the delivery guy, to feed this information back.
Yes.
Right. But obviously it's very difficult because often, you know, there are many links in the chain, and the courier might be a freelancer or something. He may not, you know, have a, you know, does he have time to do this? Does he have an inclination to do it? All this kind of thing. So, but that's not the approach you're taking.
Absolutely. Well, it is sort of part of the pipeline. So what we're, our kind of, how we're trying to differentiate ourselves is to have a really good solution on day one. So there isn't any need for, you know, GPS sensor data, or, you know, when a courier takes a photo of the package on the front door, that also, you know, that would be geotagged. So it can be used to inform other drivers. Usually it doesn't. That's just for, you know, peace of mind. That is sort of like the last piece of the puzzle for us. And how we would use that is not for day one, but that's just sort of to refine our prediction. If building entrances have been mapped in OpenStreetMap, it's happy days. And most of the time it's like, we can just, you know, regurgitate that in our answer. I'm sure you're aware, like 99.9% of the time, people don't map those, and we just have to infer it from the road layout and topographic data.
So are you working primarily with OpenStreetMap data, or you're using other different data sources as well?
So definitely OpenStreetMap does a lot of heavy lifting, and if we want a solution that works worldwide, we can't be too tied in with like country specific stuff, but we are starting out in the UK. We use a lot of data from Ordnance Survey, some paid for, some open data. It sort of depends as well on the business, because sometimes the business already pay for certain data, and we can provide code that makes better use of it. You know, depending on their budget, it might just be, we want to go from like 95% accuracy to 98%, and, you know, we don't need perfection.
Well, you mentioned these customers or partners. So what stage is the business in? This is actually live and people are using it, or you're still in the kind of development phase?
So it's very early days. We got venture capital funding 2 months ago. So we were only sort of in a position to start marketing our API 2 months ago. But we're talking with several clients, arranging trials, trying to understand where we can add extra value. But to summarize, this is first and foremost an API where we're selling. And in a way, it's a sort of a quote unquote geocode service, but I feel like that sort of simplifies a bit too much, because what we're providing is like this navigable geocode, which is a place, the point on the road network to drive to. A doorway geocode, which is our best guess of where the door is, and a path between them. And that path really needs to be something that does not have any, is unimpeded by barriers. Like, we don't draw this dotted line leap of faith. This path is very squiggly and exact.
I can imagine there must be so many edge cases there. First of all, it's very interesting what you say. As someone who now has worked on geocoding for many years, it's fascinating how many different kinds of geocoding there are. We were discussing this briefly before we started recording, and it's funny. I mean, obviously, forward geocoding, reverse geocoding, but then all the different use cases, exactly as you say. Like, some people went exactly to the door, and some people then the overlap with routing, and
yeah, I feel like the base case of geocoding, just like the rooftop geocode, is, you know, perfect for like drone delivery, right? If you just want to deliver it to the roof. But in the delivery context, it is often pretty misleading.
If I may ask you, just so the name of the company is, of course, doorways.ai. What is the AI piece to it, or is that just the hot new thing everyone thinks?
Well, it is. There is a little bit of that. I think at the moment the algorithm definitely fits the classical definition of AI. If I think back to my computing degree, the introduction to AI started out talking about the like A star parthing, which obviously you can't really create a company like this without using A star somewhere. So it's like pathfinding with heuristics, the way we do the sort of the barrier avoidance stuff is sort of like the AI of a robot vacuum cleaner, and sort of the occupancy mapping and that sort of stuff. I think it's sort of as we start collecting GPS and sensor data, it's going to, we're definitely going to earn our sort of AI and machine learning credentials. We'll be doing like density-based clustering stuff to really refine, based on previous samples of where we have detected the courier going to the, like, basically we'll be detecting where the courier seems to be doing the delivery, and clustering those points and using it to sort of refine our initial prediction. And part of the predicament going with this approach alone is that you sort of need to deliver to every single house at least once to do this. But if you do it in a smart way, if you get that right for one address, if you get one house in a terrace right, you can suddenly have a lot more confidence in your prediction for all of the other houses in that same sort of block of townhouses, that same terrace.
As you correctly note, it's going to be impossible to be perfect. It's more about moving from 95 to 99% to then 99.9%. So what has been the response so far from industry, from from the courier companies, or from are people hungry for a solution like this, or?
Yeah, as I say, it's pretty early days. I mean, we've had pretty positive conversations so far. we were surprised with sort of the diversity and the sorts of companies talking to us. We were expecting it's mostly going to be, you know, delivery companies with their own employee drivers, where they're sort of counting the pennies and sort of saying, you know, every minute of this driver's time costs us like 15 pence or whatever. So shaving off that minute adds up to, but you know, we're talking with like more mainstream sort of mapping providers, talking with also companies, organizations abroad as well. Like we have ambitions to go global, but we weren't expecting it to be so soon.
Well, I see that as a challenge. I mean, you know, every country has its own peculiarities and weirdness, both in the way the buildings are structured and, you know, all these types of things. And I could also imagine, I mean, a key piece of it, of course, is where can the driver park, right? I mean, we often see drivers parked illegally, you know, because on a bike lane or whatever, because they want to hop out and do the delivery, which is understandable, but also, you know, highly annoying. And in some cases already dangerous. So, I mean,
that is definitely a problem that can be solved. Once you start gathering lots of GPS data, you can effectively create like a parking heat map of where drivers have left their car. It is, I guess, in a way, it's not going to be perfect, because you're also going to be showing, it's hard to detect where they parked and they shouldn't have been parking.
Right.
But I think it's more about if you're doing a delivery to like the city of London, and you know, often it's even difficult to drive the car, let alone park it. Knowing, unless you know the area very well, is very useful to be told, well, a lot of drivers have had success parking on this street, and it's not a very long walk. And so, you know, if you adapt your router to sort of follow a path that will take you by a lot of these potential parking spots and flag them to the driver, that seems like, you know, a way of, it won't eliminate the frustration of parking in the city of London. I think that's an impossible thing to do, but it will certainly minimize the frustration.
Well, as someone who actually used to live in the city of London, I used to live in the Barbican, which is probably level 11 in delivery complexity. I don't know. There need to be better solutions also in terms of like kind of centralized depots or something, where rather than having 20 vans each delivering one, you know, tiny package, we should have one van that, and or one depot where the things are distributed or whatever. But
yeah, definitely. That's
probably a rant best held at the pub after the next GMOB event. So
I wanted to ask actually, just because I feel like this is the, I'm curious your take on this problem, and it's possible that I'm just being completely stupid, but I want to ask, so obviously we're both quite familiar with OpenStreetMap. If you have if you imagine like a town square, like a plaza, you might draw it with like, you know, it'd be a pedestrian area, you know, a rectangle you draw. It is, If you use pretty much any of the, I could not find a single router that really solved this problem. If you are asking for the shortest path from one corner to the other, you won't. So Grasshopper, some of the parlors just won't even attempt. But Grasshopper will say, well, you can go around the edge, which, you know, that right angle obviously is not the fastest route. And as a result, you often see in OpenStreetMap these weird sort of virtual footpaths that people have created, you know, crisscrossing around plazas like this.
I see. There's no clear path linking them. You just have to know. I mean, this is always the fundamental issue, right? Is that how are things tagged, and how do you understand what the tags mean? Like, so in theory, that should be tagged as being a pedestrian area, and then you would have the logic that, no, you can walk across it, right?
This is the thing. It is tagged like that, but due to sort of like the complexity of representing that as a graph that you can traverse, like human will, when it's rendered, it'll look lovely. The human will know I can roam freely around this,
yeah.
But the parser won't. And even though this is sort of a silly example, this is the sort of fundamental problem that we had to solve, because we're not always dealing with neatly drawn out footpaths and roads.
I understand that the inclination is to assume that there's a graph with nodes and lines linking the nodes, and that's in this case not actually the case.
And there's you could respond by saying, well, you know, maybe your parser should, if it sees a big square, it should like generate, you know, crisscross like diagonal lines and stuff like that. But so what happens if there's someone's drawn a fountain in the middle, or there, you know, trees dotted around? It's like, is it going to get around that? I present this as a sort of a simple example, just because it's like, this is what we have to do is we're dealing with polygons rather than lines mostly in our parthing, and that our solution does not scale across more than 100 meters. And it might just be that we're, perhaps someone clever has a solution to this. I can say
what always gets me is customers or people always assume, you know, in their mind, our database is kind of like an Excel table, right? There are a few columns and a few rows, and it's all neat and organized. And I'm like, yes, it is like that, except for it's, you know, many billions of rows, and they're changing constantly in real time, and people can put in whatever they want, any kind of, it's a whole different scale of the complexity of it, you know.
I'll try and say how we're solving it. We think this is pretty flexible, and it's like the best solution that's worked for us so far, but, you know, it might not be the final one. But what we're trying to do, what we try and do in the to solve the problem of parthing through an area, a polygon, we gather all the obstacles, and these obstacles have different sort of permeabilities, you know, some things like, a little section of grass in this town square, you might not want to walk over it, but if you have to, you have to, right? But we rasterize all these obstacles, all these fences and lines, into a grid, right? And we try and, just like, you know, in a retro game, you would have pathfinding that works on a grid. We're trying to do the same thing. We're traversing it pixel by pixel, and also allowing ourselves to jump over obstacles, because sometimes you're surrounded by what looks like a fence, but actually there's probably a gate somewhere there. Constantly keeping track of the you know, the cost, the distance you've gone so far, the barrier cost. This is the point. Crucially, we're not limited by the lines that are drawn in OpenStreetMap to represent the walkable features. This is the fundamental problem we're trying to solve. And for the most part, I think we're doing a good job. It does sometimes look a little bit, this is why I say we have sort of squiggly lines on a map, when you're sort of trying to traverse the void of, you know, an unmapped customer's front garden and driveway. But that's really the problem.
You just have to somehow say, you know, this portion of the journey is left as an exercise for the reader to navigate.
But that's the leap of faith, right? That's what we're trying to get. We don't like, you know, just drawing a dotted line and say we don't know, right? We can draw the line and then sort of shade it in different color to say, you know, use extra caution, but it should be scientifically derived. You know, one of the things where we want to look at in the next year is not just using, you know, the topographic like vector data, but also use like aerial imagery, because the thing is, this isn't always going to work, but quite often, you know, like the paving slabs in a customer's front garden, that's going to be it's going to be a different color in the aerial imagery, right? And you can make some assumptions about that.
Wow, yeah. That would truly be the final 0.01%.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, you know, the if there are really the really, really toughest addresses, as a stopgap, you can always just, someone can always map the building entrance in OpenStreetMap, maybe even draw a footpath to it. I think that's a bit overkill to draw the footpath, but, you know, if it's a very difficult address, or the the homeowner is a OpenStreetMap enthusiast, I would definitely encourage people to do that if they know of difficult addresses where it's ambiguous.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of people doing that. If it's a difficult address, or if it's a brand new address, for example, then, and it's not yet, you know, in all the different systems or whatever. But anyway, Jake, as we wrap up here, how can people test the service? Is there you know, they should get in touch with you, or is there a public demo they can play with?
So there is a public demo on our website, doorways.ai. So So this demo, it does have every address in Great Britain, with a little asterisk, but every address in Great Britain. So if you know of some tricky ones, or just, you know, you want to try out your own home address, just zoom in, tap, and, you know, it might take a second, but our algorithm will sort of show the path, the front door, and the navigable point. You can see what we think of it. And there's like an advanced mode sort of checkbox as well. If you do that, if you click that, it's going to be, we're basically kind of like purging all of the debugging information on the screen. You can sort of work out how our barrier avoidance works. You know, the search tree recreate. And also, like, I think it's most interesting to do in an area where there's poor OpenStreetMap coverage, because that's where we really have to work hard, and we have to make more inference. We can't just you know, stand on the shoulders of the giants of the OpenStreetMap community. But I think the elephant in the room when you use this is you will notice there are lots of dots for things that aren't addresses, like ponds, the beginnings of streets and bus shelters. This is because these points come from the open UPRN data, because otherwise we can't publish, you know, expensive data for free. But this is because this is open data, we can do it. But we can't. There isn't a way of filtering out the non-addresses from that.
I see.
But anyway, I encourage people to give that a go.
Well, very cool. Yeah, I encourage everyone to give it a play. And, you know, we're going to have to get you or one of your colleagues to a GeoMob in London in the near future to show this off. So
definitely.
A lot of interesting things to talk about here. But nevertheless, I did want to end on one note of personal interest. Any geocoding horror stories you want to share of, like, most bizarre places people try to geocode? Or?
Yeah, so I had the unenviable task of trying to compute some sort of geocoding difficulty score for every address effectively in Great Britain, but to just sort of give a score to each postcode district. One of the measures is sort of one of the, in part of this score, is the on-road distance between the naive leap of faith geocode to the actual address. And I discovered a little place called Foulness Island, which has a weird name, but it's a very interesting place in Essex. And I don't expect that inhabitants get that many deliveries, but presumably they do from time to time, somehow. If you open Google Maps and ask for driving directions to Quartz End, which is, I guess, like a little hamlet.
Right now. Yeah.
You'll be taken. You won't be taken to the lovely bridge they've built. This isn't, you know, an island in the middle of nowhere. This is a, you know, island river, nice bridge. It does require permission to go across, because it's, you know, it's sort of owned by the Ministry of Defence, I think it's Ireland, but the wrong answer is to say, well, the closest public road is this one across the river next to this farm, which is where you would be taken. And if you were, you know, Amazon driver sent there, that would be that mistake would cost you 1.5 hours of your time and 34 miles.
It puts you completely on the wrong side of the river, and then there's no way across, is there? Huh?
And, you know, like in our, my, me and my co-founder, in our previous jobs, often we don't get many customers on Founders Island, but there are lots of rich households on these little islands, sort of dotted inside the River Thames in southwest London. And these little islands, they all have like a single footbridge, and either it links the north of the river or the south of the river. And you better hope that your sat nav takes you to the right side of the river, otherwise that's quite a costly diversion. Not an hour and a half, but still, unless it's very low tide or you've got a dinghy in your van. Yeah,
isn't this is the kind of place where people die, right? If they go out on a walk at low tide and misjudge it, or good lord,
I don't know, but I feel like some couriers are really go above and beyond, but you don't want to be telling them to, you know, put on their wellies and swim across any sort of waterway to make that delivery.
Fantastic! What a great example. Amazing. But
as I say, that is the worst example in the country. You know, we're not saving you an hour and a half in most cases. Usually, it's just, you know, one road over. It's a minute or two, but. Yeah, you know, those are the delays that are done.
We will get that linked in the show notes. Fantastic. Great stuff, Jake. What is the best way for people to get in touch if they want to learn more?
I think website doorways.ai. You know, we've got LinkedIn. If you prefer, just email hello@doorways.ai. It's probably the easiest way.
Okay, fantastic. Well, always fun to talk about geocoding, and always interesting to see someone taking a new approach to it. So I wish you and your colleagues the best of luck. And as I said, it would be great to get someone to a GeoMob event in the near future to give us a deeper picture of how it all works. So
I look excellent. Forward to yes. That.
Thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to the GeoMob podcast. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. Get in touch with us if you have any feedback or suggestions for topics we should cover. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly mailing list where we keep you informed about upcoming events. You can, of course, also follow us on Twitter, where our handle is GeoMob. Thanks for listening, and hope to see you at a GeoMob event soon.